Glad to see all of you out this evening as we continue our summer series, study of biblical women and their historic influence. Our speaker tonight, Drew, I'll tell you what I did to him. I didn't even give him a title, the name of anyone. In fact, this person that we're going to study about tonight is not even identified by name in the Bible, but everyone knows about her. It's entitled The Poor Widow. And Mark chapter 12. We're really pleased this evening to have Virgil Fry with us. Virgil is with the Lifeline Chaplaincy downtown. He's the director. He has been affiliated with that organization. I asked him, how long have you been there? He says, 30 years. I got a little pamphlet the other day, and I think they're celebrating 30 years. We're pretty close to it. So Virgil has been down there for, I guess, from the inception. And that group does a wonderful work. I've asked him to tell us a little bit about Lifeline Chaplaincy, and he reluctantly agreed to do that before his topic. But I know that a lot of folks here go periodically to the dinners, and it's always a fun occasion and get to see a lot of folks and that. So we're delighted that Virgil was willing to come out here, make a pretty long drive from downtown, but we're delighted to have you, Virgil.
Well, really, Cleo, I was about the only one on the highway. It wasn't too bad at all. So, you believe that, right? I bring you greetings from someone that you may know. You may not claim him, but Chuck Hicks and I were talking a little earlier, and he and Debbie are very, very fond of this congregation, and he said he misses you, so I bring you that greetings. Chuck works with us in development fundraising in Central Texas and also here in Houston to keep our ministry going, and he's actually working on the upcoming gala. You mentioned that. It's September 23rd at the Westin Galleria, and some of you have been to that before, and I hope you will come back, and some of you are probably going to get called by Chuck Hicks, so you've been warned. So we invite you to that. I also brought some of our newsletters. You may receive that, but if you don't, there's some copies of our newest one out in the foyer. I have spoken here. It's been several years ago, but Lifeline Chaplaincy has been a part of this congregation, at least by loose affiliation, for many years. I started out my work as a representative of the Churches of Christ at MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Elton Stubblefield was part of the group that the original board that helped me in those early years back when I was just a teenager. I think I was 13, wasn't I, Elton, or something like that. So that began as a work primarily there. Since that time, it has evolved and grown with God's blessings in so many ways. We have another chaplain that works with me, and I oversee the organization overall. We have a chaplaincy work in Dallas. We have a chaplaincy work in Fort Worth. And then we have one in Central Texas at Scott and White Hospital and also the Austin Hospitals. And so between those centers, we have about 30 to 40 trained volunteers in each one of those centers. They and the chaplains work within the hospital departments. The chaplains' departments are work along beside them and make visits. And last year, over 32,000 folks were visited by our group of people in hospitals across the state. And that's sometimes a very crucial time. It's very difficult times. Nobody wants to be in the hospital. If you want to be in the hospital, you've got another kind of problem. But they're also wonderful to have when they are available to us and when we do need them. In addition to that, we have a program called Compassionate Touch. We work with social workers. We receive funding from foundations and grants and individuals. And we work specifically with about 200 to 300 social workers in the hospitals on short-term immediate help for folks. On things like housing, we can sometimes provide 2 to 3 nights in a hotel from people that are sleeping in the car, or they're sleeping in the waiting room, or sleeping in the patient's room, and they just need out and need a break. Sometimes it's with meals. A lot of people don't realize how much it costs just to be in a hospital, even if you have insurance. And parking is a huge issue. It's $12 a day at the medical center. And if you leave and come back that same day, you get to contribute another $12, unless you've made a different kind of arrangement. And so that work has helped almost 2,000 families last year in those kind of specific things. And that comes from people that are the neediest of the needy. And it's a very rewarding work. Social workers work very hard to make sure that, that money is given directly to the people who need it most. And then we do a lot of training. Our chaplains and myself and others train folks on how to make visits in the hospital, how to be appropriate, how to avoid certain statements like, well, when you walk in and talk to somebody and you find out what kind of disease they have, and if what comes out of your mouth is, oh, my uncle had the same thing that you have and he died. We're trying to train people to avoid those kind of statements. I actually used to think that was just a made-up joke, but I used to have patients tell me a lot that people would walk in and make those kind of statements and thought it was helpful. So we try to sensitize folks and ask them to maybe listen a little bit more than they talk and actually be with folks. Very difficult to go through serious illness. Many of you know that firsthand, or many of you know it because of your families. And I myself have been on the receiving end of caregiving with my wife, who was seriously ill for the last 2 years of her life before she passed away 7 years ago. And there were many, many folks from Lifeline that were a part of that journey with us as well. The passage I was given is found in Mark chapter 12. It's the parallel passage to it is in Luke 20. Cleo said one of the people that he really thought about doing in this series was Jezebel. And I said, well, you know what? I would have enjoyed that one. I think I would have enjoyed that topic. Now, have anybody ever heard a subject or a talk on Jezebel? Not done too often, is it? So, but this is a story, and it comes at, kind of at the end of Jesus' life, and it's just a very few verses, and you're right, Cleo. This woman is known far beyond what she probably ever thought about being known. In fact, what she did was so done in secret that she didn't even know that she was being acknowledged in whatever way that she was. And Jesus has just spent quite a bit of time doing some of his teaching and specifically preparing the disciples and the believers for the upcoming end of his life and the upcoming new kingdom that would be heralded in with the resurrection. And he also spends quite a bit of time on taking on the strong religious leaders that were presenting God in a particular way and had a lifestyle about them that really did not suit Jesus well as representing God as a loving God and a merciful God and one available to all people. And so the passage begins of this particular story in Mark 12, beginning with 41, but I want to back it up just a little bit to 38. As he taught, Jesus said, "Watch out for the teachers of the law. They like to walk around in flowing robes and be greeted in the marketplaces and have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. Such men will be punished most severely." And Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put. This is in the temple, and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins, worth only a fraction of a penny. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put in more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." I'd like to talk about this story with two ways. One is the traditional way that we often focus upon the woman, but also the one in which the context implies that there's a lot more going on with this teaching that Jesus is also trying to emphasize to us. So, what is the traditional view? How do we often, and I'm actually asking for you to respond, if you're willing, not all at once, but how do we usually interpret this particular story as an example of that Jesus is providing us? Generosity. Sacrificial giving. Giving out of what she had and giving it all. So, and Jesus does make note that what she had was very little. And what she put in was it all. Did you notice that when the wealthy people were putting it in, they threw it in so that you could kind of see that there was a large amount? We're not told about her. It said that she put it in. Probably with two coins, she may have just kind of slid it in and just was trying to be unobtrusive. Don't know that, but it's implied. But Jesus does make note of her gift and the situation in which she gave it. So, if you're going to define generosity then, how do we often define generosity? What does that word mean? Okay. Joyful giving and selflessness. Which is part of, yes, and she was saying, sometimes we think of generosity as being large amounts and a huge amount. And that's kind of the scenario that Jesus is saying. The men thought they were being generous by giving a lot. But in fact, they were giving out of their abundance, and they went home and had plenty more. But sometimes generosity is actually the small things, isn't it? It's the not the size of the gift, but the fact that you care. It's amazing that we can get touched so much by someone who just stops and asks how you're doing, really, when you're having a hard day. You do know the official answer to when somebody asks how are you feeling, right? Fine, yeah. Anything more than that, you've gone way too far with information, right? So, but occasionally, there are people that really do want to know and say, no, tell me how you are, really. And they mean it, and you feel that among them. That's a small but generous gift, in my opinion. The things that we give, for example, in Compassionate Touch, sometimes it's a $100 gift card or a $300 gift card for people to help pay for some of their medications that they're having to pay out of pocket or put gasoline in their car so they can drive back to their home. The parking is sometimes families cannot afford to come and visit the patient, which actually helps with healing, unless somebody helps them with the parking. So it's the small things, and we get some of the most wonderful letters from the small gifts sometimes from people who've been receiving. Yes, Elton? Yes. Right. There is the story of the rich young ruler who was basically told, sell all that you have. It's getting in the way of the kingdom. Though Jesus didn't say that to everybody, did he? He said it to that person because that was what was blocking. It was the riches and the hanging on to the riches that was keeping him. The question of the rich young ruler seems to be, give me my checklist. And he checked off most of them pretty well, he felt like. But the riches, the hanging on to the physical things was keeping him from it. So, yes, sometimes Jesus did expect that. So, sharing our resources with each other. You ever watch the TV show Hoarders? That'll get your attention, won't it? It's how we as human beings can become so consumed with keeping things that it just begins to pile up. And, of course, those are generally very extreme examples. But it's the capability within all of us to become hoarders, to become so self-serving that I'm not going to share anything with anybody else. because it's mine, and if I give it up, I've lost it, and it's mine. Did I mention that it's mine? You know, if those of you that have kids or grandkids, you've had this discussion, right? If you've got more than one kid and you have to share the food or the toy. I kept my two granddaughters last night who were 8 and 5, and we had this discussion more than once, as I recall. Whose turn is it and all this sharing stuff? It's a very important concept. In fact, it's one of the bases of our faith life. It's, can we give things up in order to serve other people and other to share people? So what's the biblical basis for that? What scriptures do you think of where when we're asked to be generous, to be sharing, to be willing to open our hands and share it with somebody else? Ananias and Sapphira, well, that's a good visual example, isn't it? Yeah. So, that was actually, it's a very good example, though. Of they tried to get credit for giving more than they did. And really, there was no mandate there that they had to give it, but they appeared to be generous in order to do that. But in fact, they were holding on to part of it. So, and it got in the way of community. It got in the way of even trust levels when that goes on. Yeah, Elton. That is true. The early Christians, after the day of Pentecost, they did pool all that they had, and they shared it with each other. And the scriptures are very clear about that. There's another hand over here. Yes. Okay. The golden rule itself is based on generosity. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. It's not generally how we think. We think we have to do unto others before they do it unto me, right? We have to strike first. And Jesus turns that around and says, do unto others. You want to know how to be treated? How to treat others? Put yourself in their shoes, and that's how you're treated. And that lends to generosity and a giving spirit. Anything else come to mind? Yes. Good Samaritan. Yeah, the story, the parable of the Good Samaritan, who normally would not be called good in the story. The Samaritans were not people that were looked up to. In fact, they were looked down upon and despised. And Jesus also turns that around. And do you remember what question prompted the story? That's right, who is my neighbor? Someone came to Jesus and said, who is my neighbor? And said, well, let me tell you a story. And at the end of telling the story, and he talked about the lawyer that went by and the priest that went by and walked on the other side, and then it was the Samaritan who came by and took pity and had compassion upon the person and saw to his needs, tended to his wounds, and had him taken care of where he was. And then Jesus stops the story and he says, now you tell me, who is the neighbor in this story? I mean, it's a very good example. Jesus basically, instead of just answering the question, he painted us a picture. And it became pretty clear that the guy that asked the question said, well, I suppose it's the one that took care of the one that needed help. A good description of generosity. In Acts 20:35, remember the words of the Lord Jesus, it is more blessed to give than to what? Receive. You ever experience that? When you really experience the joy of giving something, where it just brought you joy to give? And it's also important that we know how to receive, by the way. Many of us feel like it's wrong to be joyful and thankful when we receive because we're always supposed to be giving. And in fact, it's both. Many people that are in the hospital sometimes find it hard to be on the receiving end of the things that are being done for them because they're used to doing things for other people. And that is a learning process. Jesus received a lot. A lot of people supported him and helped his ministry and provided for him. And so we're not told not to receive, but Jesus says it is more blessed to give than to receive. Again, helping us to to enjoy that a little more. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 6. So when you give to the needy, or give alms is one version, the King James Version, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites in the synagogues do, and on the streets to be honored by others. I tell you the truth, they have received the reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Pretty fascinating way to do compassionate things, isn't it? And it's not the ones that are making the show of it and make sure that it makes the 10 o'clock news. It's the ones that just step up and do the right thing and do so quietly without making a big deal about it. Jesus says that's the kind of thing that allows God's compassionate love to be shared, and you become the recipient because you're willing to share that way. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality, Romans chapter 12. And then that chapter gets really convicting in a way in verse 20. It says, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Isn't that amazing that we're told that we don't only feed each other and take care of each other, the ones that love each other, but we can also feed our enemies, the people that we wouldn't normally think of befriending. Jesus also threw that in earlier about, you know, don't just pray for those that you know, but pray for your enemies. Kind of one of those difficult passages we don't talk about too often. But all of this ties into what the poor widow kind of brings to our mind when we think of someone who was willing to give and to put it all in. And then finally, giving in a way that Paul says when he's talking to a group about providing out of their wealth for a church that was in desperate need, see to it that you excel in this grace of giving. The grace of giving. It's what Jesus calls us to do and showed us what to do. So, how's generosity shown? How do we show generosity in 2014 America, or within our churches, individually or as a group? What'd you say, mission? Yeah, things that are done with mission. Somebody just got back from, you know, I believe it was you, looking at some mission works that go on. It's amazing some people that give themselves and give their lives over to serving others in faraway lands. And for them to do that, somebody has to help support them. And so many times the generosity of either churches or individuals helps that to be done, in addition to the generosity of those that are going and serving. Yeah, that's a very good example. How else? How else can we be generous, or are we generous? Yeah. Your personal service is a big one, is it not? The things that we can do where nobody's watching, you know, the small things. Just being courteous. You know, it's hard in a city this size that as many people. I actually did travel on the freeway with a lot of people coming up here. I was joking earlier. There's a lot of us. And you know what that does and what kind of behavior that brings out in us? It's my lane and just get out of my way, right? I'm moving on, and don't take all my space. It tends to bring out our aggressive side when we're all packed together and trying to share the same road space even, much less the grocery store and anything else we're trying to share. And yet, personal courtesy, having the ability to say, it's okay, you go ahead of me. It's okay. You take that. It kind of helps us all relax a little bit and lowers our blood pressure. And apparently Jesus knows that we need that. So. I remember a friend of mine who was a cancer patient going through some really hard times. And this was actually in the 70s. And he he was actually a resource for Lifeline when they were beginning their work. They brought him back down here. But he talked about the people that would do special things for either he or his family. He had four young children. He was not supposed to live, and so they were really hitting him hard with the most strong of the chemos and everything else they could with the particular kind of lymphoma he had. And so he was just barely getting by. By the way, he is still alive. He defied the odds in that sense, and God provided him a long life. But he said every once in a while, like if he was at church in the middle of this treatment, somebody would walk by and put an envelope in his hand and then say, shh, and ask him not to say anything. And he'd get home and he'd open it up and it'd have cash in it. Because they knew that he wasn't able to work at that time. A wife was working and they had four kids. The truth is, bills keep coming in whether you're working or not. I went on vacation 2 weeks ago, went up to the Northwest. I'd never been up to Washington State and Oregon and all that. Had a wonderful 9 days. It was just so refreshing, and 63 degrees was the high. It was a little higher than that when I got off the plane here. But I get back, and guess what's in my mailbox? The same bills that would have come as if I'd have been home. It's amazing. They didn't take a vacation. I'm going, what's up with this? When your life gets interrupted for whatever reason, good reasons or unexplained reasons or unexpected reasons, a death or some kind of tragedy or a car wreck or whatever it is, expectations keep coming. The house payment still has to be made. The insurance has to be paid. Groceries have to be done. And so that's where sometimes we have to look as to where we can serve. What gets in the way of generosity? What impedes generosity? What stops us sometimes? I'm sorry? Selfishness, yeah. When we are so focused on ourselves, maybe to a fearful state. If I share it with you, then I won't have any myself. We fail to take into account God's abundance, right? And God's bounty, and that there is no limit to what God can provide us. Do you know that the more you hold on to something, the less it's yours, if you're trying to hang on to it? There's a real spiritual lesson, and I've had to learn it through the loss of my wife and actually the loss of four other family members since her, including my parents, that if you try to hang on, in my case, try to hang on to my family the way that it was 7 years ago, it doesn't work, because that can always shift with the death of someone and change. It doesn't mean that the love that they had and that you have dies, but the family is different. You cannot hold on to something and make it yours. You can receive something or somebody as yours and look at it that way, and then you're able to share it with other people. It's very, very important, I think, to remember that. I think sometimes we're afraid of being generous with some people because we're judgmental about the people that are needing the help. They're lazy. They're not working. They're not doing their part. They might be taking advantage of me. I used to be on local church staff, and sometimes we get a lot of requests, and we always had people set up that were supposed to screen people to see if the people making the request really needed it. That probably happens here too. And we do have to be good stewards of what we have, but on the other hand, at some point we have to say, you know what, some people may take advantage of us, but I'd rather be taken advantage of by being too generous than by being too stingy and trying to hold on to something that's not ours anyway and not share it with somebody who's really in need. You know, Jesus is pretty clear. There's going to be sometimes we give each other a drink of cold water or visit them in prison or provide a meal or visit them in the hospital, and you're actually visiting. Jesus says it's the same as if you visited me, took care of me. So I think sometimes we have to pull back and watch our own judgmental attitude. I deserve what I have, and you don't. Jesus never said that. Jesus provides that. Well, the other view that I want to talk about for just a moment is Jesus also is concerned about the system of where a widow is brought into a system and gives all that she has and has nothing left to give. If you back it up again to where I read from, Jesus has already been pretty hard on the folks that that devour widows' houses. We don't know exactly what that means, but the historical context is that many times widows in first century Palestine did not have much voice. In fact, they became almost destitute if a husband died, and particularly if he had amounted any kind of debt, and if the children are unable to provide for her if they're not adult children. The Hebrew scriptures are very clear that you're to honor your father and your mother, and you're to take care of them. And it was actually in place, and there were times when that got challenged too by Jesus. It is interesting if when you look in Luke 11, and let me just read this real quickly. This is verse 39. Then the Lord said to him, "Now then, you Pharisees, clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside are full of greed and wickedness." One of the things that gets in the way of generosity is greed. It's the self-centered. This is when he was being asked, "Why don't your disciples always wash appropriately before they eat?" "You foolish people, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But give what is inside the dish to the poor, and everything will be clean for you." The ones that were so worried about hand washing were also not too worried about the people going hungry around them. And before we get too judgmental of the Pharisees, that also could happen to us, can it not? Where we get so full and so self-concerned that we don't really see the people that are struggling around us. And so Jesus doesn't necessarily commend the poor widow. He doesn't condemn her, but he's saying there is something about this system that is wrong, where a widow is down to 2 pennies, or which is 1/60th of a day's wage, if you want to put it that way. And everybody else has this opulence, this wealth, this overabundance of stuff, and here she has 2 pennies, and somewhere she feels either compelled by generosity, or maybe she's been told she's got to share what she has in order to keep God from being angry. Yes. Yeah, and he's right. There's a lot that's to be said about the American economy that keeps making more better. The more stuff we have, the better off. I was just listening to NPR coming up here, and they were talking about our economy is based on what we buy as consumers. And they're saying right now we're not doing enough. So you're not doing your part, Woodland Oaks. Get out there and buy more stuff. That's what was being said. It's your fault if the economy is tanking right now. And it's not tanking, but it's just holding its own. And it gets back to what you're saying. To be content with what we have is actually one of the spiritual exercises, and not always be looking for more, more, more. There really is a spiritual lesson to be learned by however much we have, it's never enough. There seems to be an idea that if I have just one more of whatever it is, that will satisfy me. Most of you are at the age when you probably thought when you were 18, well, boy, when I make X amount every year, that'll be it. I will have arrived. And as soon as you made that amount, if you're like me, you said, well, when I make another 10,000 more than that, then that's when it is. And it doesn't satisfy. And I know people that live very opulently, and they're never satisfied on what they have. There's always something more. So it takes more than that, and it's almost a corrective to that. And yet, sometimes we, and all of us in this room, would be considered wealthy by the world standards, by the way. And we think that by looking generous, that makes us generous. That's what Jesus keeps calling into question. Just because you want to look generous isn't necessarily God's economy. It's how, not how much you have, but how much you're willing to give. Yes, Alvin. Yes. It is one of the woes, and the same phrase is used. You devour widows' houses in the condemnation of the religious leaders of that day. And again, he gives a picture. They loved the flowing robes. be sure and call me Rabbi in public. Let people know that stand out of the way because I'm coming through and I'm important. Well, there's something nice about being recognized that way, and Jesus says, but that's not a sign of generosity. It's not a sign of who God wants us to be. It reminds me of the story. I had a friend that his son was a patient at MD Anderson, and this guy, he was a real, he had just a wonderful take on life, but he had this thing about titles and how people sometimes use titles to impress people. He said he lived near University of Oklahoma, and he was at some kind of gathering that he had been invited to, he and his family had, and he introduced himself. His name was Glenn. He said, my name is Glenn, and the guy that introduced himself back, he said, well, I'm Dr. So-and-so. And Glenn came back, and I actually said this at his funeral. Glenn came back, and he said, your mother named you doctor. I wish my mother would have named me that. It would have saved me so much trouble, you know. And he said the guy was kind of looking a little startled. So he kind of called his hand on having to be called doctor and made a joke out of it. And the guy wound up laughing about it. But it is amazing how, you know, we want to be known by our title sometime or by our place or by our house or by whatever it is, the kind of car we drive. And in fact, there are scriptures that talk about we are to take care of our own. You remember when Paul says the one that doesn't care for his own, meaning his own family, is worse than an infidel? There is an obligation that we're not to give it all away so that nobody in our own family has anything. That's not biblical either. God provides us things in order to take care of our own needs and the needs of those around us. It's just that we are not to hoard those so much that we don't share them with anybody else. In 1 Corinthians 8, our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed. Paul's very clear. I'm not trying to put you in a hard-pressed place so that others can live well and you don't. This is actually the corrective to that. But that there might be equality. You've got enough to share. There needs to be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. Then there will be equality. There is that Christian basis that no one should go without. As long as we can provide it and that God has provided it for us, we are to be generous and give it to others. That seems to be the story of the poor widow as much as anything else. That people were missing the point. They were making a show of being generous. And this woman gives all that she has, and nobody even notices. And yet, who are we talking about 2,000 years later? Who did you think of when you're thinking of a list of people? This woman who gave quietly and provided that. True religion does not castigate the poor and make them worse off or take advantage of the vulnerable. I have wondered if she had children. In fact, that is one of the issues that Jesus also takes on. I think it's Matthew 15. You give your gifts to the temple and tell your parents, well, I know it says honor your father and mother, but I've given my money to the Lord, and therefore I don't have any money left to take care of you. And Jesus says, you break the command of God when you do that. So, yes, that is an issue. And if she had small children that she was caring for, it makes you wonder. There's just a lot we don't know other than this little slice. And yet, we get all this taken care of. Have you ever heard anybody say, and preachers say it, you need to give until it hurts? You cannot outgive God, so you give until it hurts. And Ken, if this is one of your sermons, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take it. But I've actually heard it said that, you know, if it's not hurting, if you're not sacrificing to the point that your family's hurting, you're not being generous. And that's not necessarily what Jesus is teaching. I heard a minister one time who was big on promoting large churches, make things grow as much as they can. And he had this statement that he made. He said, I believe that churches ought to borrow as much money as they possibly can, to get back to your statement earlier about credit. Go in debt as much as you possibly can and build and build and build and bring in as many people as you can. And then when Jesus comes in the second coming, you'll let the devil pay off the debts. He'll be stuck with it. And when he said that, everybody just cheered and clapped and thought that was a wonderful system. And I thought, well, you know, we are supposed to be responsible. But that, I mean, he stated that. That was his view of what would make the kingdom grow. You just keep going into debt. It tends to backfire, does it not? Jesus came in poverty, and he fed the poor because he knew what it was like to be poor. And when we care for each other and when we are being transformed by this poor Jesus who is teaching us what the real riches of the world are, then that's where real life is. And that's the story that I take from this poor widow. Be generous, care unselfishly, trust in God's able to provide for us, love one another, and be a voice to the voiceless.
Help us. Help us have a generous heart, Lord. Help us to put others before ourselves, to be cherishing your word every day, Lord, looking out for others and all those around us. Lord, please thank you for giving us this day of the week to recharge, to be here with our brothers and sisters and learn your word, learn more about you and learn about each and every day, Lord. Please watch us as we travel home, and please be with all those that are heading off to school. And getting back to the normal school routine this year, Lord. Thanks for being with us, and in your son's name we pray. Amen.